This is an AMI podcast. This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Dave Brown, and this is a podcast version of AMI's Morning Show, Now with Dave Brown. Catch the live broadcasts weekdays from 9 to 11 a.m. Eastern on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI. Just before we bring in Ryan Delahanty for the Atlantic Regional Reports, I've got one little bit of an oddball news story for you, and I want to bounce a question around the table. A foot of snow fell in the town of Aalborg, Denmark, stranding six customers and about two dozen employees at an IKEA store. They all spent the night at the store. The store manager says those trapped bunked in showrooms in the furniture section on the first floor. Peter Elmos says everyone could pick the exact bed they've always wanted to try. Elmos says they spent the night watching TV and eating, and the whole experience went super well. It was the same winter system that blew through England earlier in the week that stranded a bunch of people at a pub for three nights. They'd gone to go see an Oasis cover band, and by the time the set was done, they were barricaded into the pub. So I'm going to bring Sam in here. I'm going to bring Ryan Delahanty in here. Sam Robinson, would you rather spend a night stranded in a pub or at an IKEA?
I mean, so you have to make a caveat there. They were stranded in a pub with an Oasis cover band.
Correct.
I mean, as far as entertainment goes, I think they've got alcohol working for them there. But I really like the idea of getting to visit or just like stay in an IKEA, stay like wherever you want, take the plushest bed. I mean, it's not really a private room. It's but I like how strange and I don't know, kind of what's the Dali kind of thing? It seems very
surreal.
Absurd.
Surreal, yeah. Absurdism, yeah. Surreal to like spend a night in IKEA.
I love it though. That's the kind of stuff I love. And you know, that kind of feeling of some place that you shouldn't be, or like a toy store. Like, mm-hmm. Imagine renting out a toy store and just hanging out in it for 24 hours.
During the day, I would not want to be stranded in a full IKEA.
Yes.
At night, little different, little space to roam.
Get stranded at the pub first, get stranded at the IKEA later.
You know, I think I would have an easier time spending my time if I was stranded at a pub. I would know what to do with myself. Yeah. But I feel like, a couple Swedish meatballs and my own bed, my own little like room.
You've got catering at IKEA.
Yeah, but I can make that work too. Let's bring in Ryan Delahanty. Ryan, would you rather be stuck for a night in the pub or stuck for a night in the IKEA?
A little more to make an informed decision. I'm more likely to be annoyed by the Oasis cover band. But if they have a kitchen, if they've got like darts or a pool table, maybe a Touch Tunes jukebox I could control or something, then I might pick the pub. Otherwise, I feel like the IKEA might be more relaxing.
Can we
less claustrophobic, yeah.
Can we destroy the instruments of the Oasis cover band to make sure we don't have to hear Don't Go Away one more time? Sam, you have to go away now. But Ryan, you stay right there, because Ryan, you're here to help us with the Atlantic Regional Reports. You are indeed a content development specialist for AMI and are joining us from Halifax. So Ryan, let's jump in with some good news, because you have some good news and some bad news today. Let's start with the good news. We have the over the weekend was jam-packed with accessibility-related events to mark the UN's International Day of Persons with Disabilities. Tell us a bit about a holiday breakfast that you attended on Friday.
There was a great turnout. It was nice to see a room full of people connected to the accessibility disability communities here in Atlantic Canada. And so it was the International Day of Persons with Disabilities holiday breakfast hosted by the Nova Scotia League for Equal Opportunities, otherwise known as NSLEO, just at a hotel here in Halifax, emceed by April Hubbard, who's a good friend of us here at AMI Halifax. They unveiled Nova Scotia's new Access Awareness Week logo. Keynote Stephen Esty gave background on Canada's role in the UN Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, and the Clarendon Robichaud Lifetime Community Award, created to reflect a commitment and passion to improving quality of life for persons with disabilities, was also presented during the breakfast.
So tell us a bit more about that award and the person who won it.
It went to Marcy Schwery Stanley as the recipient of this year's award, recognizing Claire Don Robichaud, who was a tireless advocate for those with disabilities before his death in 2018, working on provincial and national level for several groups advocating for the disabled, playing a significant role in the passage of the Nova Scotia Accessibilities Act, and dealing primarily with transportation issues, especially for people living in rural areas. And so the award was given to Marcy in recognition of her more than 40 years advocating for people with disabilities. In addition to working with Enterprise Cape Breton Corporation for about 27 years, several years with the provincial government, she served on boards, worked with many local, provincial, and national organizations. Just to name a couple, the Nova Scotia Advisory Council on the Status of Women, the Nova Scotia Disabled Persons Commission, the Society for the Improvement of Accessible Transportation, and many others.
Wow, no shortage of incredible accomplishments there and years of doing excellent advocacy. Speaking of advocacy and human rights, on Friday's show, during a regional news update, we explained that the Nova Scotia government was going to be appealing a landmark human rights decision about housing discrimination against people with disabilities that we'd talked about at length on this show. Well, Ryan, we did find out about this appeal. So before we get into the appeal, tell us, remind us a little bit about what's going on with this actual human rights discrimination case.
Absolutely. It's quite a long-running saga stemming from the cases of three disabled people who were forced to live in locked psychiatric wards at the Nova Scotia Hospital because they weren't provided the supports necessary for them to live in the community. None of them actually required institutionalization on medical or psychiatric grounds. In 2019, a Nova Scotia Human Rights Board of Inquiry ruled that the trio had a right to live in small options homes in their communities. However, it refused the Disabled Rights Coalition's argument that their cases were not just limited to the individual, but were a result of broader systemic discrimination. Both the province and the complainants appealed that decision, sending it back to the courts. According to provincial government statistics, there are currently about 1,900 disabled Nova Scotians on waiting lists for living supports. The coalition estimates about 1,000 of them are currently institutionalized as they wait for supports to live in their communities. So it is, you know, of a much bigger scale than just the three people who were found to have been discriminated against. In October of this year, the Court of Appeal for Nova Scotia found that the Disabled Rights Coalition had proved that the province is violating the human rights of impoverished disabled people when it doesn't provide access to the supports needed for them to live in the community. And most importantly, probably, was that it sided with them on that matter of systemic discrimination. And then in the wake of that decision, early October, the new PC Premier for Nova Scotia, Tim Houston, had remarked that the province would not exercise its right to justify the shortage of services before the Nova Scotia Human Rights Board based on financial or other grounds, which should have allowed the inquiry to go straight towards issuing demands upon the government to fix the system.
So let's elaborate on what happened last Friday.
Yeah, so basically what was expected was that, you know, the coalition had held this press conference, I think last Tuesday or Wednesday, not having received an update since the decision, wanting to compel the government to start taking action. You know, they felt they had waited enough and want to see these underlying problems start to be worked towards a resolution. You know, an end of institutionalizing people with disabilities, rapid elimination of the waiting list for community housing, starting to firm up the funding to take care of this, end the practice of people having to move far from friends and family. Often you have little control over where you're placed if you actually do get a placement. And they really wanted to work hand in hand with the government to come up with these remedies. And we're pretty optimistic, I think, that that would be happening and they could start working towards the timetable. And then on the eve of International Day of Persons with Disabilities, there was a very different announcement that came out. So there is actually a meeting set between the Disabled Rights Coalition and the Premier's office, I believe the Premier in attendance today at 5 p.m. So it'll be very interesting to see what comes out of that. But the initial message from the Premier was that he heard the court loud and clear, pledged to work with the disability communities, and then made this announcement on Thursday night that they actually would be appealing the discrimination charge. The Minister of Community Services, who announced this, said that they're not appealing the individual judgments, the awards given to the three people who were found to be discriminated against. Now, two of those three have passed away prior to this decision being made. But she feels that the top court, so going to the Supreme Court of Canada on this issue, might help the province to resolve how other social programs could be impacted by these changes to their disability supports. So the last thing that people wanted, they've waited long enough, was more red tape for this to drag on. Even if everything was going smoothly, they expected these remedies may take 2 years or so to be designed, to be figured out. And this option of going back to the Supreme Court, really just looking at, it seems like they're not even challenging the decision, but just looking for guidance from the Supreme Court on how to best implement it. So it seems a little bit odd to me, but very disappointing and discouraging to everybody involved. Vicky Levac has been a big part of this. She found this out on her birthday, ruined her birthday. She was part of the event on Friday as well, and definitely is eager to have this conversation with the Premier today. So one of the people also quite involved is Dulcie McCallum, a member of Canada's delegation to the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And even before this news from the Premier, she had told the news conference that if Nova Scotia doesn't act on the decision, it could result in a formal complaint to the UN. And that's definitely something I think the Premier would want to avoid. And that was echoed by Claire McNeil, the lawyer for the Disability Rights Coalition, who said they will pursue the human rights process to ensure there are written guarantees of reform. And, you know, it's clear from the court's decision that anyone who doesn't want to be in an institutional setting and wants to be in their community is now entitled to do so. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, if the government sticks to their guns or if they're able to come to the table today and actually start to work together to fix the underlying problems here.
So Ryan, we've only got about 45 seconds left, but that's my observation here, that it seems that this relationship and working on this policy has now become a bit acrimonious with this appeal hanging in the air.
It definitely came as a big surprise. And so based on past record, there's a lot of reason to be skeptical. You know, it's not unheard of for a government to kick an issue, maybe an expensive issue, down the road a little bit, maybe let that become somebody else's problem. Yeah, so it's very discouraging, you know, and especially with the initial remarks from the Premier after that first decision, seemed really encouraging. And I think it definitely, they felt the tone of the conversation may be changing. And again, they just don't want to fight to prove there is an issue. They want to get onto that hard work of actually solving the issue. And that's already been years delayed.
Yeah.
If this goes to the Supreme Court, there is a good chance the Supreme Court might refuse to hear it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're kind of back at square one, but with a damaged relationship and probably a lack of trust as a result as well.
No doubt about that. You've been listening to Now with Dave Brown. Hit the subscribe button on any podcast platform and leave us a rating and a review.
This was an AMI podcast. For more accessible media, visit AMI.ca.